Metro Council neighborhood funds, keep them, ditch them, or change them? It seems only appropriate that we begin a discussion on Metro Council policy by hearing from the council president. Jim King, a Democrat, was elected to represent the good people of District 10 in 2004. During his tenure, Jim has served as majority leader, chair of the Finance Committee, and is currently serving his second term as president of Metro Council. Mr. President, we welcome you back to the Louisville Forum.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed, and good afternoon, everyone. First, Ed, I quiet a crowd in the Metro Council chambers by, instead of asking to pray, I say, let's now say the Pledge of Allegiance. And that works very effectively as well.
Thank you for the suggestion.
And I don't remember Watergate, but I'm sure you do. I'm going to need a couple more minutes than 3 minutes, I'm sorry, but I thought this was a five-minute thing, so you all have to bear with me. And I know my council members are used to me taking more time than I'm allotted, so they won't care. Let me just start by saying this audience is very astute and certainly understands the separation of powers among the executive branch and legislative branch. But exactly how does that work? Well, a good example might be that the Metro Council passes laws but has no enforcement power. While the mayor can't make laws, but he controls enforcement. A better example, and on point today, might be that the mayor can't spend a dime to provide city services or further his agenda without the Metro Council authorizing the spending in advance. Of course, the inverse is true. The Metro Council can't spend a dime of taxpayer dollars even if we authorize it. Let me repeat that. The Metro Council cannot spend a dime of taxpayer dollars even if we authorize it. We don't have the checkbook. The mayor does. So even if we pass an ordinance that says Main Street must be paved, the mayor can simply ignore it. Many of you, I'm sure, realize that intuitively, but consciously, I'm not sure a lot of people do. Keep that thought in mind as we discuss neighborhood development funds and capital infrastructure funds today, which I'm going to call NDFs and CIFs. As you know, we're involved in our annual budget process right now, and that begins with the mayor sending the Metro Council a proposed spending plan. The mayor's spending plan has both discretionary and non-discretionary sections. The non-discretionary sections address things like the city's contractual employment obligations and paying for gasoline for police cars, while the discretionary sections might address things like opening an office for military affairs or funding a new bicycle and pedestrian path along River Road. NDFs and CIFs are often referred to as discretionary funds controlled by individual council members. The general public believes each of us has a checkbook that we control and can spend those funds in any manner we see fit. Well, that's just not true. Council members have no checkbook, and the reality is that NDFs and CIFs are no different than any other accounts in the city's budget, with one exception. And this is important. On $700 million of our budget, the mayor gets to propose the use of the funds, subject to council approval. With NDFs and CIFs, a council member gets to propose spending up to $175,000 with council approval. In either case, the council must provide its approval, and the mayor must sign the check and sign the ordinance. You may hear today from my Republican colleagues that they would prefer not to have any CIF or NDF accounts. Apparently, they would prefer the mayor propose all spending. I just disagree with this approach. For an amount that represents 0.5% of the city budget, I happen to believe good government begins at the grassroots level, and there is no one more familiar with the needs of a district than its council member. Eliminating the NDFs and CIFs would mean we'd have to make a case to the mayor for every little need we have in our districts so he could propose the spending in our annual budget. This is not only impractical, it's nonsense, especially in those areas of town represented by Democrats that are typically less affluent and deteriorating. Frankly, my colleagues' actions belie their words. None of our council members have turned down their allocations of NDFs or CIF funds, and in fact, they have used them regularly to improve their districts and support good social service programs. Just yesterday, my good friend Councilman Miller was pleading with the mayor's staff to repave a street in his district that had 65 filled potholes. I joked at that time that at least he's getting his potholes filled. That's a joke. Thank you. But the reality is he could propose paving the street using CIF dollars, and the council would give immediate attention to that need. And earlier this week, he spoke on behalf of Councilman Stuckel's proposal to use CIF funding for a BMX track and media building at AB Sawyer Park. I have no problem with that, but with apologies to Bill Shakespeare, methinks thou dost protest too much. This is my last page. In the wake of the recent ethics complaints against one of our members pertaining to NDF spending, I have been asked by a member of the press what we are going to change in our system. Without being glib, my response has been that absent fraud, the NDF approval procedures are effective, the internal auditor that we fund brought the current NDF allegations to light, and the ethics ordinance that we created provides a fair and impartial forum for the adjudication of ethics issues like these. That system works. Let me make one other thing clear. In light of the NDF ethics allegations, the Courier-Journal has rightfully spent untold hours researching council spending and has reported spending on things like food and refreshments for district meetings and events. I think it's important that you understand these expenditures were all within council rules approved by all 26 members in 2003, and none of them were NDF expenditures. None of them were NDF expenditures. They've been blended in the press, they've been blended in your minds, but they weren't. The funds for these expenses came from each council member's $30,000 office cost center accounts, which truly are discretionary. As president of the council, I'm on record asking our members to cease certain spending practices from these accounts until we can evaluate our policies with respect to those accounts. I'm also on record saying that just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Jim. Our second speaker is Ken Fleming, a Republican who both represents District 7 and serves as the Minority Caucus Chair. Councilman Fleming, we thank you for your leadership in our community and for your willingness to serve on our panel today.
Thank you very much, and we do appreciate the opportunity to come and speak before y'all, and thank the board and Ed for having us here, because I think this forum is a great format to really focus on local issues, because really there's not other format that really focuses on local issues. Even so, the federal, you bring it down to the local level in terms of grassroots. Well, obviously, we're looking at NDFs, and Councilman King is right. Frankly, I would prefer to eliminate NDFs. And mirrored basically the competitive cities that really do not have these type of discretionary accounts. In fact, there has been initiatives from the Republican caucus at least to eliminate or at least reduce the amount of allocation. But given our voices are in the minority to eliminate these funds, we are pushing for great accountability, transparency, and oversight of the processing, approving, and monitoring of these accounts. Now, NDFs is one component of the council member's discretionary spending. Each council member, be mindful, has really $205,000. Councilman King mentioned two of them, CIFs and NDFs, which total about $175,000. There's also an office account of $30,000. But what is at issue is not NDFs, but it's basically, it's all about all three accounts. The reason I stress this is that several council members transfer monies between the accounts. And being on the council for 8 years, I understand that the needs of each district is different, and one need is not greater than the other. In other words, different districts have different needs. I also understand there isn't a one-size-fits-all to cater to the various needs of all parts of the community. For example, Old Louisville may need more police patrols or inspection officers, which may cause overtime, yet the dollars may be relatively small, while suburban areas need more infrastructure involves larger chunks of money. And even though the primary topic here today is NDFs, I want you to know that Republicans pool their CIF monies and collectively decide where the best area to spend these funds for the greater good of the community. So the question is, do we keep them, get rid of them, modify them? Well, if we are to keep them, we must change them. And here are some suggestions. reduce the NDF allocation by half. This would free up $1 million to help reduce our deficit or reallocate it towards nonprofits, which is a proven track record through the external agency process, or set up a special meeting or a special committee for council members. Two, post all council members' NDF, CIFs, and office accounts expenditures online, similar to what I did several years ago through councilmanfleming.com. Three, stop the transfer of money between accounts. We should learn to live within our budget and reverse the trend of members shifting money between these accounts. It is important to note that each year, the Republicans have returned more than $100,000, or 34% of our budget, back to the general fund. And finally, we need to strengthen our rules on what is or isn't allowed. We need to clarify on what is public purpose, and we appreciate the mayor's OMB support to provide oversight, which the previous mayor did not follow through. Now, these are just suggestions, and I hope there'll be some bipartisan supports of it. And I do appreciate the this community and Little Forum going through and shed some light on this, and I look forward to really more further discussion and debate about this, because this is an important issue that we need to look at. So we look forward to listening to your questions and go from there. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Fleming. We each are aware of the importance of developing new leaders in government and other positions of responsibility in our community. So our final two speakers today are both new to Metro Council. First, we welcome David James, a Democrat who represents District 6. Councilman, congratulations, and we are anxious to hear your perspective on these important issues.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to be here today, and I'm going to do it within 3 minutes, okay? All right. Louisville Metro Council discretionary spending processes, no doubt over the past several months, have been discussed and have come to light in the media and show fundamental flaws in accounting and oversight practices in Metro government related to Metro discretionary spending. I applaud Mayor Fisher and President King and others who have worked to shine the bright light of day on Metro government's books. And I'm in favor of continuing to find ways to make sure that every tax dollar spent is accounted for entirely. I'm glad we're able to have this conversation about where we take discretionary dollars, specifically neighborhood development funds and capital infrastructure funds, and whether or not they should be part of the Metro budget in the years to come. I, for one, am an avid supporter of NDF and CIF dollars, and I believe that while the process for accounting for these dollars might need to be tweaked, the overall positive result of the community gains warrants the remaining necessity in our government. In District 6, we face a multitude of social and capital issues. We have a high rate of AIDS, infant mortality, and gang violence in my district. Additionally, the majority of District 6 is in the urban service area, and it's the older part of our county. Sidewalks are crumbling, and streets are gradually falling apart, leaving potholes and cracks that need repair. I'm with you, Councilman Miller. One only has to look at a few examples of how this money is spent to know why these funds are integral to improving the quality of life in our neighborhoods. Just recently, I and four other colleagues granted $25,000 to the West Louisville Community Ministries. It's a group that provides basic needs to people in the west end of our community, like emergency assistance, utility payments, senior prescription drug assistance, and food for citizens that can't afford it. Equally, as part of the work that they do, they look to capitalize on the dollars that we give them. For every one Metro dollar they receive, they try to raise privately $3, $4, or $5 in private donations. And they use the people that receive that money in order to help them do that. So clearly this is a group that is worth funding because it removes a handout for people and provides them with a hand up while saving Metro government money. Another opportunity to improve the quality of life in neighborhoods that I just took an initiative with the Louisville Metro Police Department in Old Louisville. Public safety is the number one responsibility of government, in case no one's ever said it. It is. It encompasses over half of our Metro government dollars, and it has an impact on our everyday life. So just recently I announced a partnership with Louisville Metro Police through my district office to provide overtime officers in Old Louisville and area in the Old Louisville area in response to a spike of crimes and burglaries and theft. In just 2 weeks, we've reduced crime in Louisville by 37%, caught one of Louisville's most wanted individuals, and served over a dozen arrest warrants. Clearly, the money spent out of the District 6 NDF was well spent because it helps supplement and cover additional ground that LMPD usually doesn't have the ability to do. In conclusion, just let me say that Metro Louisville is a diverse network of neighborhoods. And while everything in our community might only be 15 minutes away, that doesn't mean that all needs in the county are the same. Neighborhood development funds and capital infrastructure funds serve as opportunities for government to make a memorable and lasting, life-changing quality of life change for the people in those communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman James. Our final panelist is also a new leader to Metro government, but no stranger to government beyond the boundaries of Jefferson County. Jerry Miller, a Republican, represents District 19, and prior to joining city government, he served in state government, both in the Commerce Cabinet and as Commissioner of State Parks. Welcome, Councilman. We are anxious to hear your perspective on this important topic.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you all for having me today. David, this guy is a very impressive young man. He is a rising star, and I'm proud to follow him on this agenda. But David, I'll tell you, with Kelly Downard and Tina Ward Pugh out in the audience, I'm reminded of the fool's rush in where wise men fear to tread. I think they're the smart ones here. Nonetheless, starting out as a CPA in my 31-year private sector career, I focused on auditing, accounting, financial management, and then later general management. And then as was mentioned, I then went to state government, and I was Jim Host CFO, or at least that's what he called me, over finance and management, dealing with contracts and a lot of different issues. And in those 35 years, I dealt with a lot of similar issues that I face today in Metro Council. But I have to admit, when I started my campaign 15 months ago, I did not have a well-defined position on discretionary funds. Other than jobs and opportunity, I based my campaign on transparency, accountability, and fiscal responsibility. And those remain my guiding precepts as I pursue my actions on Metro Council. Now, like Hal Heiner, I participate with the other minority caucus members to pool our CIF funds so we can do larger, more meaningful projects. But, and then on my NDF, I use those for assets, hard assets that have a future benefit to the community, a long-term benefit. I have used it in one case as matching money for a nonprofit or a small government to obtain more grant money from other places. And I might occasionally, rarely, depart from it if there's a disaster or a once-in-a-lifetime event that could use some help. In February, I had the opportunity to talk to the mayor about my top priorities and my observations on council. And I told him at the time that I really felt we ought to reduce each council person's NDF by $40,000 and put that $1 million toward reducing the deficit and some of that toward the external agency process. And I still believe that. Further, I stated that the CIF, the capital infrastructure funds, should be used for capital and not allowed to be moved down to NDF and then later into office accounts. As Ken said, our peer cities do not have these type of funds, presumably because they believe legislators should legislate and not become their own mini mayors. If you were to build a government today from scratch, would you create a system where the legislators had this much discretion on spending? I don't think you would. And in fact, the merger task force for finance looked at what the city and the county did, and they each had discretionary funds, and they made a unanimous recommendation that Metro government not have them. Yet here we have them. You've heard about the mayor's 5-day furlough program. I think all the rest of the council people are going to participate that voluntarily since we don't make $70,000. But that $20,000 savings from all 26 councilmen, $20,000 savings, is a mere hollow gesture relative to giving up $40,000 of our NDF funds and putting $1 million toward this budget and our external agencies. I admit they're not, NDFs are not likely to go away, but I will say, and under the strong mayor system that we have, probably it's a good thing that they not completely go away. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't use our discretion and our judgment to increase the accountability, transparency, and the fiscal responsibility with which we administer these funds.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Councilman Miller. We appreciate your leadership as well. Now, as I said earlier, we are going to deviate from our normal procedure by allowing each council member to ask one question of another panelist, as though we haven't had a little debate going on already. And we're going to reverse the order. So, Councilman Miller, you have one question for one other panelist, please.
Well, at the risk of, is this on?
Sure.
Okay. At the risk of having my office moved up to the clock tower of City Hall, I'm going to ask President King, recognizing that you passionately believe that we need to continue the discretionary funds, would you recommend that each of our 138 state legislators be given a similar fund, and if not, why not?
Well, is this on here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The simple answer is that's up to the state legislature to decide. Let me start by also mentioning Jerry, and thank you for mentioning Kelly and Tina out here. Councilwoman Ward Pugh is chairwoman of our Government Accountability Committee, and I should have pointed her out earlier. And Kelly Downard is vice chair of our budget committee. And as president of the council, I have the privilege of creating those committees and appointing those chairs and vice chairs. And I couldn't be prouder of the work that Councilman Ward Pugh and Councilman Downard have been doing this year. And I want to thank them for that. I've got 30 seconds remaining. Okay,
sorry.
Thank you. I want to take a minute here, or take 30 seconds apparently, to comment on a couple of things that I just read into the record yesterday during the Committee on Committees. That's where we decide what committees things go to. And this was legislation assigned to appropriations, NDFs, and CIFs. We had $8,000 to go to the police department for overtime expenses. We had $50,000 to go to Metro Parks for improvements to an Okolona Park. We had $10,000 to go to Metro Parks for facilitation of the Green Triangle Initiative. And we had $6,000 to go to the Exploited Children's Help Organization. I'll mention one other. District 16, Councilman Downard, sent $5,000 to help clean up the massive log and debris jam on Harrods Creek at US 42 Bridge. That's how we spend the NDFs and CIFs normally.
Thank you. And so your answer to the question is specifically about the General Assembly is that's their issue.
Certainly.
Right.
I mean, I'm not
fine.
A legislator. I'm a state representative.
Mr. James, you're next. One question for any member of the panel.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you going to get whisper in my ear?
No, whisper
in
your ear.
I can hear you.
My question would be for Councilman Fleming, and it's this. Councilman Fleming, over the overwhelming majority of your district is represented by small suburban cities. Because of this fact, your constituents pay taxes to those cities for the upkeep of their roads and sidewalks, and are also provided with various programs and activities with those tax dollars. As of the latest NDF reporting period, you show that you have over $200,000 in your neighborhood discretionary funds. Do you have a plan to spend that money, and if not, would you be willing to return it to Metro government to spend in other areas of the county?
Well, thank you, Councilman James, and you're right. Do I get a prize for having the most? I mean, for being the most conservative?
You don't have the most. You're
pretty close. No, but I do appreciate that comment, because that question has been asked to me on a couple occasions, and I think his question really is getting to the nut of what really needs to be asked, and that is, what's the understanding? How are you going to use the money? Not say, give it back. So these suburban cities, which I represent quite a few of them, along with Councilman Downard, those individuals pay property taxes. They pay into the system. They have a separate tax structure. They support their roads, just like the Urban Services District. But there are county roads that go through through my district and other districts that need to be updated and maintained. And historically speaking, Those funds have not been available on a, I guess, on a more of available basis. And so, to answer your question, the over $219,000, I am working toward a project to be allocated toward that. Now, I've also been mindful that I have worked with your predecessor, Councilman Unsel, where I have allocated $25,000 to put a new park in. Has nothing to do with 7th District. So I am looking for opportunities, and I have asked and reached out to several council members in all parts of the community to see what I can do to help out in their particular areas. So partnership, I believe, is an important thing, and so we need to do more of that. So in any case, like I said, it's that money will be there to help with a project. But if for some reason there is a need to go out there in the community to reallocate it, I'll be more than happy to sit and talk to those type of capital improvements.
Councilman Fleming, I'm not going to let you away from the microphone. It's your turn to ask a question.
Thank you. I want to ask one to my colleague from the 10th District, Mr. King. We joke around a little bit about about pooling and controlling the funds and trying to have a little more oversight in terms of how we want to spend the monies and so forth. But as I mentioned before, we have gone through a pooling process, and I want to see has there been discussions with the with the Democrat caucus in terms of pooling those funds to help out those larger needs, because it appears that there are quite a few smaller type of expenditures for the projects and so forth. So I want to see if that's been talked about, and if so, great. What are some plans? If not, why not?
Thanks for the question, Ken. And the short answer is no. The reason why not is that there's such a small amount of money and the needs are so diverse that we do our best to spread the dollars around in small increments. And generally speaking, many times that we do that, we are seeking leverage, and we give an organization or we put X dollars into a project if it is matched or if there is some other money to be raised. I think that you mentioned earlier that some of the things you all try to do. So we typically don't pool. Our needs are diverse, and the amount of money is very small that we have to meet those needs.
Thank you. And while you have the microphone, the last question is yours, then we'll turn to the audience.
All right. Jerry and Ken, I hope you don't mind sharing the office in the clock tower.
I do apologize. Council Miller did ask a question. I probably should have posed it to you just to spread it, so I really don't.
No, that's,
I wasn't going
that's great.
You.
No, that's great. I'm glad the two of you are together on that.
You
help each other carry your desk upstairs. obviously I'm kidding.
Well, he's a police officer, so he could arrest
seconds.
Me.
I've and got, I sit yeah. next to him.
30 seconds.
Okay. Well, you and Jerry could give, you've argued that maybe we should cut our NDFs by half. You and Jerry could do that. Nobody's stopping you. Let's start with that. You could give back today. You could commit right now that you'll give back your half of your NDFs and CIFs today. So I think it's a little disingenuous to argue that you think they should be given back and you not do it. Your argument on the county roads, I think, supports our position that you need the money in your district to meet your needs, and you want to propose that spending because you're more familiar with the needs out there than anybody is. Now, here's my question. You suggest we cut NDF allocations in half and take that dollar and spend it elsewhere. Who is to approve the spending of those dollars elsewhere?
Who is that?
Oh, let's go to Ken. Okay. Who's to approve the spending of those dollars elsewhere?
You have the external agency process.
Who is to approve it? Who's to approve the spending of those dollars? Who is the ultimate approval of spending of those dollars?
Well, you have to go through a filtering process, and that's external agencies.
And who approves it?
Well, it actually comes back to the council.
Exactly. Okay.
But I think you're missing the point, though, also, because...
No, I don't think so.
Well, there's two council members that sit on those, at least two council members that sit on those external agencies, but we have to approve them instead of going through a process to filtering and make sure that they're justified and so forth. I think that's a more of a vetting of a process, a more thorough process than going through what we do, because everything under 5,000, we basically rubber stamp it and they're out the door. If you go over that, there is some process that we go through to make sure that 501c3 and all sorts of things. But there are still some gaps that we need to look at in terms of trying to shore that up.
All right, my point is that you take it out of one hand and you put it in the other, but both hands are the Metro Council.
We're going to have to move on to the audience questions. I think this is a great exchange everyone is having up here, but in fairness to our forum policy where the audience gets to submit questions, I want to turn first to Dot Ridings with the first question.
Yes, and this topic really was discussed in one of the back and forth issues, but I want to raise it again here because this person wanted any comment, and it just came from those two. It deals with the funding. It was as discussed in the smaller suburban cities, but as it's posed here, what role do the CIF funds play in funding the small cities to meet their needs since they are outside urban services districts?
Is that to anyone in particular?
That was to anybody. And
that should go to the council members that represent small cities, I think.
We'll let anyone answer who wants to answer.
Yes. Actually, I'll be very interested to hear from my colleagues from the Democrat side on their perspective of that, because we stated that before in terms of how much the suburban cities pay to support their infrastructure. There are many county roads that go through this, but I'd be interested to hear their response on how they perceive it.
I'll be happy to talk about it briefly, and maybe Councilman James wants to also. The interesting thing about this is that when I first got on the council, there was a big debate over whether or not we could give monies in any form to any of the small cities or they could be used by any of the small cities. Because you're not allowed to take money from one taxing authority and give it to another taxing authority. And we went to great pains to work with the Republicans to change our policies and procedures to develop a method for them to take that money and use it in those small cities in different ways. So I don't know how they're using it specifically in those suburban cities, and I don't know how to respond to that question otherwise, other than to say that that I believe that anybody that pays county taxes should have access to some of this funding.
And if you don't dovetail on that, we'd pass an ordinance in terms of allowing metro government to work with suburban cities that I sponsored some time ago to have more of a cleaner process to make sure that these funds can go toward the suburban cities. I have taken on the responsibility to make sure these suburban cities put some money up, if not match on all or majority of it, to do that. In terms of the purpose of the use, some of the monies that I have worked with suburban cities have gone for right-of-ways, for beautification in terms of entrances and such. So those are some of the things that we've done. In addition to that, just some of the roads in front of the suburban cities that help their entrances out and so forth. So that's a small snippet.
Sandy?
This is for all of the panelists. Anyone can start. How do you address the concerns that these funds are primarily council member reelection funds, especially when similar cities do not have such council member controlled allocations?
Let me start. And I don't believe my opinion is really the significant opinion. The significant opinion is, what do the taxpayers feel? How do the taxpayers perceive our use of those monies? Many of them feel it's a very necessary service, and I certainly in some of the districts represented by my colleagues across the aisle, services are very important. In my district, it's infrastructure. I would not be in favor of anybody slapping my name on a project, because that does appear that I'm doing it for my own glorification, which is not the point. But by and large, I would hope people don't think that's the entire purpose of those funds.
I'd like to say I don't think that's what those funds are for. In my district in particular, I know that, you know, I use those funds to help people, and it's at the grassroots level. It's to help the Old Louisville Neighborhood Association deal with problems in Central Park. It's at the California Park to reseat the grass for the football team, and that's in extremely poor shape. So it's not as a reelection fund, it's actually the grassroots level of getting, bringing government to the people at its lowest level.
I'll just go back to the items I just mentioned a minute ago about overtime expenses for police. I guess if the police do a better job, council member has a better chance of getting elected. reelected. There is money in here for the Exploited Children's Help Organization. I'm not sure how that would be electioneering. There's money in here for removing massive log and debris jam from under a bridge that was caused by the flooding. Councilman Downer deserves to be reelected, but this isn't why he gets reelected. He gets reelected because he does a good job holistically, not because he's removing logs and debris.
We had several questions on this transfer of funds among the various pots of money, and I'll just break it down to this one. If you can transfer funds from CDF to or from the community development, the infrastructure funds or the neighborhood development funds, what is the purpose of having both? How would eliminating transfer help or hurt? And it's to anyone.
Do you want to go, Kent?
When you transfer, I mean, it's almost like a shell game. When you have different accounts and shifting things around, let me give you an example. I'm not pointing anybody out whatsoever, but let's just give a hypothetical situation, and that is, let's say we can transfer money from those accounts to an office account. Well, that's $30,000. Well, if you were to bring somebody in, you know, you can funnel money through that to build up your office account. Is that a proper use of that in terms of hiring more people into your office and take money for those two accounts and put in that office account to do that? You know, is that something we need to think about? Is there that much of a need going on in that particular district? A lot of those concerns. You know, is there a difference between that? One is obviously discretionary. It can basically, within the rules, you can apply it to whatever needs are in the community, your district or elsewhere. The CIFs are strictly for capital improvement type of initiatives. And those are more restricted types of funds. I use my NDFs as CIFs or a critical needs situation. Now, there are some occasions that it goes, I have allocated money outside of that parameter, but that's very, very, very few. So could they be commingled? No, that's something we have to look back and think about as far as taking the CIFs and NDFs and putting them together. But transferring the monies between the accounts, we really need to reel that in and not keep that, shell game going on.
Let me comment on it as well. I agree with Ken, especially, and I mentioned it in my speech, that cost centers are truly discretionary. I think the transferability has occurred over the last few years, and it's like anything else. We did it to meet a need that existed at the time that made sense. It becomes part of our precedent, and then it happens over and over. But I do think that the questions raised by the media, especially Dan Kleppo of the Courier Journal, about the use of cost center funds, because those do not go through a council approval process. They are simply allowed to be spent by the council member. I do think, and we are working on that, but I do think that the transfers may not be appropriate, or limits on transfers may need to be made. But that is an area that I would be more focused on and probably am more focused on than NDFs and CIFs, even though we're here today to talk about NDFs and CIFs.
Anyone else?
Sure. I would just say that one of the positive things for the transfer between the two accounts, whether it's NDF and CIF, is if you have spent down your neighborhood development funds for the needs that you have, and then say the Louisville Police Department comes to you and says, we have a big crime problem, we need some money for overtime and we don't have it in our budget, then I don't want to have to say, well, I've got the money sitting here but I can't spend it because it's in CIF and I'm sorry about the people that live there. So I think it's good to be able to do that.
Did anyone answer the part of the question I heard about why not have just one fund instead of separate funds?
Was that
part of the question?
Yes,
I think
it was.
Okay. Well, I personally think there ought to be two funds. One is CIF, the capital ought to be separate. The other, we ought to just pool the office account and the remaining NDF account, but just not allow them to be used, you know, take the CIF and move it in. But
you mean not allow a transfer?
Not allow transfers between the capital and the other accounts. But I don't use, and I think most of my Republican colleagues haven't used their 30,000 operating account, so I'm certain it wouldn't hurt us.
Sandy, let's go on.
Jim, were you?
No, he answered it well enough. I don't need to argue with that.
This was going back to something that you just said a minute ago. This questioner says, recently it was reported that Kelly Downer was given an unspecified amount to help clean up Harrods Creek. Why is this not coming from Public Works?
Kelly, you want to answer that question?
Well, actually, let me just say, okay. Last month I got in trouble.
Okay.
When we had people
Kelly,
speak to the audience,
it is coming. Is it being appropriated to Public Works? Yeah. So the first question is, I guess, is it going to go directly from Councilman Downer to some organization outside of the metro government? No. It's going to go from his account into, and this is a general ledger account. He has a general ledger account for capital infrastructure funds. It's going to go from that account into a Public Works account. And then Public Works will decide under by procurement laws in Kentucky how that money gets spent. And so Public Works is handling that. A better question is, why didn't Public Works have enough money in their budget to address this? Maybe they do, but maybe they decided this wasn't a high enough priority. That's where the council member has a right to an opinion, and that's when he decides to put money in.
If I may follow up, I mean, and also that might be an unbudgeted item too, that may come in that. Now, I know Councilman Downer, in order to make that happen, there had to be a match, and he contributed 25% of the total amount to actually try to address that question. So I just want to make sure people understand there is a match going on with all that.
Yeah, and I would add, again, it gets back to our strong mayor system is, why do I have 28 miles of substandard road that need to be they need to be repaved in May of last year, and they're still not paved? As President King said, why isn't there enough money to do that, to fix that money? But it should be.
We had several questions about transparency or lack thereof, and I'm going to try to paraphrase all of them into one. One person asked, is it true that the spending, actual allocations of spending, is not available in public forms, readily available public form? If so, why not, and what could we do about that?
When you say in public forum, you mean
accessible, publicly accessible.
Well, were they
easily publicly
it's
accessible?
It's in the Courier Journal.
That's all we have to say.
I think this person was speaking, or at least the question came not as a matter of routine, rather than under extraordinary circumstances, such as when the spotlight is on.
Well, there is a LouisvilleCheckbook.com, which actually there's an ability to go through and query that information in a user-friendly environment. So that somewhat basically exists. If you are going back to, or is that question maybe addressing what I was setting up a couple years ago, that could be done. And I've talked to a couple of council members about, you know, having one big, one site with all of us in there that you can query, exactly see where are we spending on our office account, where are we spending on the CIFs, and what are NDFs. And in query all that stuff, you can and find that out by district of what's going on. So I would like to see that happen. There is a form that's already existing, but it's really diluted. And it's hard to really pull out and attach it to the district. But if you have something that Metro Council has in terms of a website that you can go to, that could be work.
Any further? Sandy.
I have a couple of questions that I think sort of go together. One of them is a little bit of that transparency issue, that the funds were NDF funds were funneled to one community agency and then in turn paid other bills for a council person or for another agency, and also a question about, should Kroger cards be an acceptable expenditure for the discretionary funds? So those are, and then there was another one, there several years ago, many of the Metro Council members made significant donations to Lewis Coleman's church. Does this allow for abuse or influence? Sort of all in the same.
David, that's yours.
Thanks.
Delegation.
Yeah. I'll try to answer
part of that. The neighborhood development funds, I think, for the council members, allows the council member to help the community empower itself. The best example I can give to you is Old Louisville. Old Louisville is like a city in itself. And they have 15 neighborhood associations. And they have so much involvement from all those neighborhood people that they come to me after they've really vetted it, thought about it, and the things they really need in their community to help their community grow. And that's what that money goes to. So for me, the neighborhood development funds are how we empower our citizens to be a part of government. I call it community-oriented government. And so that's how I see it.
Time probably for two more questions.
May I comment on that real quick? Because that wasn't a complete answer on that, I don't think. Because there were several pieces to that question. In fact, there was three of them. Let me say that first, no money should go towards, from city taxpayer dollars, should go to spiritual work, and, you know, religious organizations, things like that. And any money that does go to an organization that has a spiritual arm to it generally goes through increased vetting in our process, including, and all of the NDFs do this, but the county attorney has to sign off on the public purpose, and public purpose is a very gray area, I will admit that. I'm not going to get into the 100 black men thing because that's subject to an ethics complaint right now. We're going to let the Ethics Commission handle that. On the Kroger cards, the council, this goes back to the Board of Aldermen. You know, years ago, and still is the practice for council members to provide refreshments at district meetings. As a matter of convenience, they were allowed to get Kroger cards for their office if they wanted to. That's an area that I've asked them to quit doing until we go through the policies and look at that. But all 26 members in 2003 approved our policies and procedures that specifically allow for the issuance of Kroger credit cards to offices. We are in the process and we'll be seriously evaluating that practice and the practice of providing food and other amenities to meetings. Thank you.
Anything else down here? Two more quick ones.
This is a quick one, I believe. It's akin to the question that was asked earlier that involved the Metro Public Works Department, but this one specifically says, why do so many council members spend their funds on school equipment since the JCPS budget dwarfs the Metro Louisville budget?
Has anybody up here done that?
I think a couple of people have.
I haven't. So if you have, you answer that.
I can't. I mean, I got my list here, and I'm afraid I can't remember if I have or not. But I can look at it. But
once you look at your list, okay. Obviously, I've just been on council 5 months, so I haven't done it yet. But I believe the criteria is that has been used by Hal Heiner, my predecessor, was if it's primarily for like playgrounds. If the playground is open to the community 24/7, then it meets the public purpose. And yes, you're right, JCPS's budget is far in excess of ours, but there is oftentimes not enough money for things like playgrounds.
This is really towards, the Jefferson County Public School System's foundation. It's not really the school system itself. So that's one thing to be mindful of. And looking back, there was an allocation to the Churchill Park, which was not in my district, but it was $1,000 for playground equipment. So if long as the criteria fits that it's a public purpose and public accessibility and all that stuff, then it sort of meets the criteria of what we go through. And should that be changed? That's something to be considered. But that's how, you know, that's how things are sort of set up.
One last question.
Last question is, what are the specific plans and the timing for tweaking the process you all have agreed needs to be done?
Well, I'll jump in. I think this is constantly, we're constantly evaluating. I don't know if there's a certain time frame. Councilwoman Awar Pugh and her vice chair, Councilman Kramer, have some changes to the rules as we speak. There might be some other changes as we go forward over the next couple months. And I think the chair and vice chair are doing a good job to trying to flush out as much as possible in terms of time frame. You really have to ask her, hopefully, I think, in the next month or two, I would suspect. But I would not say it's going to end there. I think we constantly got to look at our process and procedures and making sure that we are closing the gaps and shoring things up and making sure that the funds are appropriated properly and for a good purpose.
Let me comment on that. The Government Accountability Committee does have an ordinance, or it's a resolution probably right now before them, dealing with Section 3 of the NDFs and CIFs. From my perspective, and I've read it, it doesn't make any substantive changes in the NDF system. It's really tweaking. It doesn't change how we do business other than it clarifies a lot of areas that have been coming to question. But you'll be able to continue to do NDFs even under whatever changes we make. I have asked as president of the council, the county attorney, though, to do two things. One is to issue us an opinion on our policies and procedures, and specifically on some of the spending that's occurred in our cost centers. And then second, to the extent that the county attorney believes our policies and procedures need to be updated, whether it's NDF, CIF, or cost center, I've asked them to submit to us a proposal for those changes. And I've also suggested that OMB may bring in someone to review the internal controls and accounting systems in our business office that were created by OMB, and to the extent that they need to be improved, that's where the changes should come from. It shouldn't be up to the Metro Council to design the accounting system. That's an executive branch function.
I just want to say one thing is that, and this is no reflection on past presidents because we've got one another one sitting here, but I think there's been a more intense, and he did a good job, there's been a more intense review in terms of the NDFs and overall operations of the council. And I think the President King is doing a good job in calling the question and on both sides of the political aisle to make sure that our feet are held to the fire, because we are accountable to the taxpayers. And I just want to make sure that that process is ongoing, and he is really doing a nice job in terms of really flushing those things up. And I just want to make sure that y'all are aware of some of the actions we are embracing.
Thank you, Ken. And you and Jerry can keep your offices.
Well, I think everyone agrees that bipartisanship is the best way to address an issue. And in that spirit, Mr. Miller, I just want to have a full disclosure and say I met Councilman Miller last week, had a wonderful conversation with him, and it happened to be in an event where people were gathered who had bought car raffle tickets for the Kentucky Opera. And I wanted to just, in the spirit of bipartisanship, I want you to know that when the orchestra car raffle starts in 2 weeks, tickets are available at Councilman King's bank.
Yeah.
So, remember that.
I do. Okay. I do. And if you don't mind, let me say this. I realize that there was give and take here today, but Ken Fleming has become a close personal friend of mine over the years that we've been on the council together. I expect Jerry Miller also will, and certainly I expect David James is a friend of mine. So we are all working together in the spirit of cooperation. When we get over there in the council chambers, there is nothing but the highest level of respect for each other in the way we handle this. And I just think it's important the public understand that. Let me just leave it there.